You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern at 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at LockedOnBulls. On Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Instagram at LockedOnBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail line is wide open, 331-979-1369. Drop your reaction to the Bulls' first win of the season, anything that you've seen through the first four games or so, on top of all of these injuries that all of a sudden have begun to stack up. Whatever it is, hit us up, 331-979-1369. Ah, Matt, it feels fantastic to get our first win, and even more so, sweeter that it came against the Charlotte Hornets, because our friends over at Locked On Hornets, very confident in themselves, you know, over the first handful of games in preseason, and Kemba Walker's going off, and then they show up in Chicago and just look like absolute booty. But what's going on, Matt? How you doing?
Yeah, what's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Not quite the performance we were expecting from Kemba Walker, was it? I mean, we were talking about, like, we got this awesome LaVine versus Kemba duel coming up, and LaVine poured in another 30, but kind of an off night for Kemba Walker, an off night for the Hornets. So what was that great tweet you had? It was like more like Dud City as opposed to Buzz City.
Oh yeah, Buzz City is more like Dud City. Buzz, you know, City. They tweeted at us early and was like, oh, the crowd at the Bulls United at the United Center looks a bit sparse. You know, if you go to attendance, and it's not like something that we tell fans to, like, pack the United Center, especially the last few years. You know, the iteration around here has been like, stop going to games and maybe things will change as far as the direction of this team. But now that we're at a point where we're rebuilding, still want people to go out and support the guys at the United Center. But the Bulls were number one in attendance through two home games already. So I don't know what the Hornets were on. And there was a tweet the other night, too, from one of the Hornets beat writers. And he said the entire upper bowl of the Spectrum Center was basically empty at the start of the Hornets game. So that's all I'm saying.
And now we got another one on deck in Charlotte tomorrow night, so we'll be sure to check out what the attendance looks like there and see if the Bulls can go 2-for-2 in this home and away grudge match series against the Hornets.
So there's a lot of stuff to break down here, and getting the first win of the season is nice. We did end up with a sour note at the end with Bobby Portis getting injured, and we'll talk a little bit about that at the back end of the episode. But I want to break down this game real quick. Zach LaVine, now four games of 30 plus points, only done by two Bulls to start the season. That would be Zach LaVine and Michael Jordan. So Zach LaVine again, man, like, I feel like this fan base is kind of waiting for that one game where he's like, okay, he's not going to drop 30 plus. He's going to probably have 15 and have an off night. And it looked like it was steering towards that direction early in this game, having a great fourth quarter. I don't know. I think this is for real, man. I think people are sitting back waiting for this to kind of fall apart, and Zach LaVine looks every bit as real as we think.
Yeah, well, he certainly had his first, I guess you could call, off-night shooting. He still finished 10 for 22, but he was just 1 of 5 from downtown, and his outside shot was really not falling. But I love the way he made up for that, because as the game got, as the game stayed close and there was kind of like a back and forth seesaw game, the Bulls clearly were once again, just like they were against Dallas on Monday, in a position to win this game. The Bulls offense fell to shit on Monday. Last night, Zach LaVine said, all right, my shot's not falling, but I am going to put this team on my back. I am going to get us some clutch buckets down the stretch. Of course, you got some clutch timing help from campaign, and we can get to that in a second. But LaVine was passing up okay shots for great looks at the rim the further we got into this game last night. And not only did he have some great drives, I mean, the crossover that led to his ferocious down-the-lane dunk, which was amazing and one of many powerful takes to the rim we've seen from Zach already this season, but getting to the free throw line. He set career highs in free throw attempts with 12 and free throw makes with 11. That's huge. So his outside shot wasn't falling, but he was aggressive and attacking the basket. He played smart basketball last night as the game progressed, figured out, I got to attack, I got to be aggressive, and he drew the foul that got them the win. I mean, it's as simple as that.
You have to get to the free throw line, and he did that a dozen times last night, which is great, 11 for 12 from the free throw line. The shot wasn't falling behind the three-point arc, but that was kind of a common theme for this Bulls team the entire night, outside of Cameron Payne, which we will get to in a minute. But Zach LaVine having the ball in his hands, I realized that Zach LaVine has the fourth highest usage rating through four games, and rightfully so with Lauri Markkanen and now Chris Dunn missing extended periods of time. The Bulls are going to have to rely heavily, heavily, heavily on Zach LaVine now through the first 20 or so games. And if Bobby Portis is out for any extended period of time, you might see that usage rate even go up even higher. But I had to say, Zach LaVine turning it around in the fourth quarter and kind of driving the Bulls back. And like you had mentioned before, getting that late foul and driving to the basket instead of waiting and taking in a contested mid-range two. Very, very good steps and very good signs from a guy that's going to be here for 4 years at $78 million. So early returns are paying off for Zach LaVine. Let's get into a few other guys, though. I wanted to talk about this crazy outburst the bench had last night, because at one point in the first, after the first half was over, the bench was outscoring the starters. At one point, I think it was 35-19. That's crazy, especially because you were playing Felicio, you were playing Hutchison, you were playing Archie Diakono, you were playing Blakeney, and Parker had a big role off the bench last night. But how about Felicio getting some run because Wendell Carter Jr. was having problems with his contact lenses, and Felicio goes in there and drops 9 points and 5 rebounds with a steal. What'd you think about the Bulls bench last night?
It was incredible. It was really the best part of that game last night. Yes, it was fun to see Zach continue his offensive domination in various forms, and it was fun to see campaign come out of nowhere to drop 7 threes and a half. But it was that second unit that Fred played for a large portion of the second quarter. Felicio, not Robin Lopez, with Parker in the front court, Hutchison at the wing, Blakeney and Archie Diakono in the backcourt. That was the first time this season that we saw that five on the court together. And guess what? They went on a very impressive, like, 18-8 run. And they were playing spirited defense. They were calling out switches. They were helping from the weak side. There was a palpable energy and effort on the defensive end with that second unit that we had not really seen yet this season. And Jabari Parker was part of it. For all the stuff that we've talked about Jabari, like, not showing effort, not just being bad on the defensive end, but not showing effort on the defensive end, Jabari was locked in last night. And it was really, really encouraging to see, because when that second unit was out there and we were saying, oh, dear God, like, Felicio's getting minutes, this is the second unit we have to work with now with all these injuries. And they played like they were playing to earn spots in this rotation. And boy, did they look like
it. I liked it a lot. I felt like now I'm at the point where you have to run back Felicio on tomorrow night, right?
Have to. Like, no offense to Robin Lopez. Great veteran leader on this team. Everybody, not just in the Bulls, but across the league, loves and respects that guy. But he's on an expiring deal. The Bulls still have money invested in Felicio. And for all the jokes made at the front office's expense about how stupid that contract was, no, it's not like you're going to be able to trade Felicio. He's not a tradable piece right now. So at least see what you have and see if you can make use of him. Because he certainly, last night at least, looked to be like a more useful player than Robin Lopez was through the first
game. Yeah, and I, honestly, it's going to be all hands on deck at this point. Like, pre-knowing that Bobby Portis may miss extended time, I did have the conversation where it's like, okay, Robin Lopez looks like he's kind of falling off a cliff and pretty quickly. So why not just toss Felicio out there and let him build off of this impressive game to his standards last night and see what he does? Because like you said, he's going to be around here far longer than Robin Lopez. But now it's all hands on deck. Like, you're missing two of your power forwards, and Jabari Parker is really the only guy that fits naturally into the four. So now Fred is going to have to get really creative with this lineup. I want to get more into that in a minute, but I got to go back to the point guard situation for a second. Before we talk about campaign, Ryan Arcidiacono, I think we need to start taking him a little bit more seriously than we have. Am I wrong in saying that? 10 points, a rebound, 2 assists. He was a +4 in the +minus last night. 2 for 3 from the field, 1 for 2 from the three-point line. And he got to the free throw line 5 times and knocked all 5 of them down. Look, he was making a lot of really good passes and dishing it off to guys. And while he was only racked with 2 assists, I thought that second unit was running so well because of Ryan Arcidiacono in part. So is it time to take Ryan Arcidiacono seriously?
I mean, maybe a little more seriously than we've taken him thus far. And I've never been like super down on Archie. I've just always kind of said, like, he's okay.
Right.
You know, he's not great. He's not even above average. He's just okay. And when people were starting to blow out of proportion his performance against the Sixers, you're like, oh my God, look at all the assists Archie had, and he didn't have any turnovers, and look at his box score, and he was, you know, carving up the Sixers. Yeah, he was carving up the Sixers, you know, scrubs and janitor in garbage time. I was like, let's pump the brakes on the Archie love here a little bit, people, because it was meaningless. But last night, he was playing minutes in a game where the Bulls were in it and trying to win, and he was a part of that second unit that was a real difference maker in that game. So it builds on a meaningless junk time impressive game, and this was a meaningful real time impressive game. As far as the backup point guard situation now behind campaign for the next 4 to 6 weeks, I think Archie's the best that we've seen so far. But that's not a hard test. We didn't see Shaq Harrison last night, who was with the team. But, you know, I think it was probably a wise move from Fred to say, look, this is a winnable game for us tonight. And this guy just got here. I know who Arcidiacono is. I trust Arcidiacono to do the things I believe he can do. I'm not going to throw this new kid in here. And Tyler Ulis was with the Windy City Bulls. He wasn't even with the team last night. So, you know, I guess right now, Archie has the lead as backup point guard while Cam is the starting point guard. But I still want to see Shaq Harrison, and I still want to see Tyler Ulis, because it's not like I'm ready to hand the job to Arcidiacono after one game.
Right, I totally agree. And campaign had a career night, too. So I'm not ready to just say, all right, it's campaign's job for the next 4 to 6 weeks. But he did look good last night, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. I was reading up on the latest nuggets from Darnell Mayberry over at The Athletic, and they are just fantastic. If you don't have a subscription to The Athletic, you're missing out, but you don't have to. Right now, we've partnered with The Athletic to give our listeners 40% off a 12-month subscription to The Athletic for only $2.99 per month. That's 40% off the regular price for our listeners. simply go to theathletic.com/lockedonbulls. That's theathletic.com/lockedonbulls. If you don't know what The Athletic is, it was founded here in Chicago and is a subscription-based publisher of smarter sports coverage for diehard fans. No ads, no pop-ups, no audio play videos. Subscribers have access to local coverage of all five teams here in Chicago, as well as national coverage from writers like Seth Davis and Ken Rosenthal and more. TheAthletic.com/LockedOnBulls for 40% off right now. Do it. Go follow all of the Bulls writers all season long at TheAthletic.com. Use that promo code. Use that URL, LockedOn/LockedOnBulls, to get 40% off. Do it right now. Be back here on Locked On Bulls in 60 seconds. Stay right with us.
Corner. Cameron Payne. He knocks in a three. Zelda skipped all the way to the corner. Firing. Cameron Payne scores. Portis back out. Firing. Cam Payne. And he knocks that down. Levine to the corner. Up shooting.
Oh, give me the hot sauce, Cameron Payne.
Parker to Cameron Payne.
Oh, hot sauce goes. Cameron Payne has found a new position.
Back out. Cameron Payne. Got it again. Oh, my.
Captain Payne.
Drive with the left hand. No. Payne had it batted free. Got it back. Lifts a three. And got it.
Oh, my goodness.
Are you kidding me? Cameron Payne.
He's having an out-of-body experience tonight.
7 of 11.
Oh, my goodness.
All of his field goals have been threes.
Wow.
You'd have told me Cameron Payne would make 7 threes in a game, I might have slapped him, Neil.
Back here on Locked On Bulls, and yes, as Stacey King put it last night, Matt, if you had told me Cameron Payne was going to knock down 7 threes last night,
you would have
slapped would have smacked you too. Yes, 100%. I felt like I was living in an episode of Black Mirror, or in, if you're an old timer, the Twilight Zone. Just last night, not only the bench, Felicio getting some run and having a performance last night, Archie Diacono having a career high in points with 10, just all of these different guys stepping up, I would have told you you were nuts. And Cameron Payne, to his credit, 7 for 11 from 3, 7 for 13 overall, 21 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, a steal, and a block. What are you making of Cameron Payne's performance last night?
I mean, I don't necessarily want to call it a fluke. Cam had a really good night. Cam had a really good half. Let's say that.
He had a career night.
Career 21, new career high. And his 7 made threes tied a Bulls franchise record for most threes made in a half. So kudos to him on that. It was crazy. And the funny thing, which I noticed in my Twitter feed, our friend Casey Johnson of the Chicago Tribune, after Cam had missed his third three-point attempt of the night, said that's, you know, Cam's now 0 for 3 from behind the three-point line tonight and 0 for 7 this season. And then as soon as Casey tweeted that, like next time down the court, Cam hit a three. And then he hit 6 more. It was insane. It was like, what are we watching? What's happening? But I think one of the keys to the game and one of the keys moving forward for this team in the absence of Chris Dunn is you saw both Jabari Parker and Zach LaVine finding open looks for Cam when they were the ones bringing the ball up and pushing the pace, and Cam was running out ahead of the break and getting himself in an open spot. Sometimes it was a drive and a kick out, and Cam was shooting from the elbows, and sometimes he was getting out ahead and finding himself a wide open look from the corner three, which is the most efficient place you could be shooting from on the field or on the court. Cam is not a good pull-up three-point shooter. You compare his stats as pull-up three-point shooter versus catch-and-shoot three-point shooter, and the differences are staggering. We saw that last night, and we can see, moving forward, Cam playing off-ball guard with Zach LaVine being your primary ball handler. Zach can find his looks, find his shots, attack the basket, and kick out to Cam, who actually, when playing off the ball, is a pretty efficient three-point shooter.
Yeah, I noticed that, too. I noticed that set. I saw that come up on Twitter last night. Which makes sense, because we talked about it too. We said at this point you have to move maybe Zach LaVine to the point guard position and see if you can play one of these guards off ball. Knowing that Cameron Payne can hit the three at a better and higher clip than he is with the ball in his hands makes me think that, yes, Cameron Payne will be quote-unquote the point guard, But when the Bulls are actually bringing the ball up, running their sets, it's Zach LaVine with the ball in his hands. And Cameron Payne, at least to the success of last night, play him off the ball. And he shot and he was on fire last night. Look, we said it before, and we were trying to give Cameron Payne some credit. The last 6 weeks of last year, he shot over 40% from three, and he took, on average, about four attempts per game. That last 6 weeks isn't a fluke. And I'm trying to say that maybe in part, Cameron Payne can go on heaters like this, but I think the reason why people don't give him as much credit as maybe they should is because the turnovers, the mistakes that he makes are SE not top 10 plays. They are laughably bad, and I think that's what hurts Campaign the most. But I'll be interested to see him play off the ball again and see if Fred Hoiberg's able to be effective and if he can continue the type of three-point shooting he had last night. On top of his game, how about Jabari Parker for a minute? If there was anything that I was impressed with Jabari Parker last night, there's two things. One, he actually looked like he gave a damn on defense. Like, moving around, trying to contest guys at the rim. Look, he was in part to a block on Willie Hernan Gomez at the rim. Look, the rim stuffed him majority of the part, but at least Jabari Parker went up and tried to contest him there. But the other thing that I was most impressed with, his awareness in that last play where they inbounded to Zach LaVine and Jabari Parker came over and made a beautiful pick for LaVine to get to the basket and draw that foul. Those little plays, those little things should not go unnoticed for Parker. Look, if he has an off shooting night, if he's not rebounding the ball well, but he played, I think, his best game as a Bull so far, and at least his best half. It was important down the stretch, and the reason why he was in those lineups, outside of not having Portis, is the reason why he's going to stay in those closing lineups if he does the little things like he did last night.
I mean, you mentioned his defensive effort. He was credited with two steals in the box score. And also, as you mentioned, had a couple of really big shot contests, including some big moments in the fourth quarter. A couple of really solid Bulls possessions where they actually got stops and a rebound. Parker also chipped in with nine rebounds last night, and a few of them were, they all came on the defensive end, and a lot of them came in big moments in this close game late. So you love to see that. And, you know, basically what you said sums it up. He looked like he gave a damn on the defensive end, which was a refreshing change of course and change of pace. And he also showed us moments where people keep talking about him being an underrated facilitator and, you know, a better passer than Bobby Portis. And maybe he should be in the starting lineup because, you know, Bobby Portis is just a guy who's going to, you know, take every shot he sees, whereas Jabari might get the ball moving a little bit more. There is some truth and credence to that. And you saw Jabari, the facilitator, at certain points last night, including, you remember that really beautiful no look, like behind the back bounce pass he had to a cutting LaVine for an easy two? Like, that was one of the prettiest plays I've seen from the Bulls all season. And that was just Jabari being a really underrated passer.
So exciting. Hopefully Jabari builds off of this. 11 points, 3 for 7 from the field. He got to the free throw line too a handful, 5 for 5 from the free throw line. He had 9 rebounds, 4 assists, and 2 steals. It was a plus 7 in the plus minus. The entire bench was plus last night in the plus minus. On top of his game, we saw Chandler Hutchison again last night, only for 13 minutes, but the 13 minutes he was out there was also impressive. How about the dunk, too, by him with authority? Ooh,
my goodness. I think he surprised himself by how high up he got, because like his landing was kind of awkward. It was like he was expecting to come back to the wood sooner than he did and like kind of lost his balance a little bit. But oh my God, that kid looked like he jumped off a trampoline on that dunk.
I'm excited. I hope that earns in, you know, with Bobby Portis now being out maybe for an extended period of time, this is going to earn Chandler Hutchison. He's going to have to play. Like, they don't have much choice. So seeing him build off of that, going 4 for 5 from the field, He had the one solo rebound. He had 8 points in 13 minutes. Build off of that performance. He didn't do anything else besides score, but at least he was out there. You saw him running the floor, and he was actually hitting some shots. So I liked what I saw from Chandler Hutchison. He's going to have to play. Anything else that you grabbed from this performance last night besides the guys that we hit on so far? How about Wendell Carter Jr.?
Yeah, I mean, Wendell had another kind of pedestrian game. If you look at his stat sheet, 6 points on 2 of 7. He was also just 2 of 6 from the free throw line. 7 boards, but but 2 blocks and 2 assists. So, like, he did a little bit of everything last night, and that's essentially the role that is being asked of Wendell for the first part of this rookie season. We've seen a few times where Fred gets him an early look, you know, working from the block, working from the low post, and he's just kind of not really had his rhythm yet. I feel like he's missed a lot of easy inside looks, and he's shown some maybe rookie jitter, butterfingers moments where he should have come down with a rebound or he should have come up with a steal and he didn't quite get there. But essentially, he was a big player in some big moments last night. Not the hero of the play, but the guy who allowed the play to happen. You know, a guy whose blocks and a guy whose contests lead to Bulls getting easy, quick looks on the other end with that transition offense. That's what Wendell's going to be all season long. He's not at any point going to be a 20-10 guy or even a 15-10 guy this season. Maybe in the latter stages, depending on what the health of this front court looks like. But it was another encouraging game from a guy who is still so young but has so much potential. He played 30 minutes last night, and that's the other thing I really loved. Because the first few games of the season, I was like, why is Wendell only playing like 15, 17 minutes? I want to see that kid. You know, don't push him too hard into the rookie wall, but I would like it if his minutes continued to stay somewhere between 25 and 30.
Yeah, and with the amount of injuries that the Bulls have already incurred in the last handful of weeks, we don't need another injury. So please, just be careful and mindful of Wendell Carter Jr. I think the one thing that I noticed is the skills are all there. The skills are there, but maybe physically he's getting that taste of the NBA. That's going to take some time. We said the same thing about Markkanen last year. Granted, Markkanen has the pure stroke. Wendell Carter Jr., not so much. But I think it's going to take a year or two for Wendell Carter Jr. to get his body right, to get build a little bit more muscle, a little bit more definition, and he'll be able to body guys a little bit harder and not be kind of boxed out and, I would say, overmatched at points against guys like DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond and Joel Embiid, who you saw in the first handful of games. So it's going to take some time. He's obviously got to build some muscle. You can see it already. He is a little bit thin. So I think the skills are all there, though. It's just going to take some time to develop. But like you said before, I would love to see him on the floor. Just keep playing him. Just let him play 28 to 32 minutes a night. At this point, you're missing so many guys, you're going to need him anyway. And your other two options are Felicio and Robin Lopez. So in my opinion, I want to see Wendell Carter Jr. out there. Like you said, 30 minutes or more a night.
Yeah. The other highlight of Wendell's night was that amazing gif of him screaming behind Bobby after that insane poster that Bobby threw down.
Yeah, that was a great dunk.
So good. I mean, like, the dunk was filthy. And then Wendell, who's been fairly reserved on the court so far as a rookie, definitely let his emotions, I wouldn't say get the better of him. He just let his emotions come out, and it was amazing.
Oh, Bobby's loose.
Kid Gilchrist is late getting over, but early full poster.
That is already up there. He tweeted it on a Locked On Bulls account, but that's already up there with the Bobby Portis stare and Wendell screaming to his left. That's already up there for photo of the year in the NBA. If it's
so
not
good
already, it should be. But let's get
so good
to the bad news here. The bad news being that Bobby Portis, what looked to be initially an ankle sprain that he went out in the latter stage of the fourth quarter last night, now we got a report after the game that it might be more serious than they initially thought. And so he did a scan this morning, this coming from the Chicago Tribune, went under an MRI on his injured right knee Thursday morning. And it says there's internal concern he'll miss an extended period of time. One source initially estimated was at least 4 weeks, with potentially a similar injury to Chris Dunn. So no Lauri Markkanen, no Denzel Valentine, no Chris Dunn, and now no Bobby Portis. Matt, I don't know what the rotation is going to look like tomorrow night.
I mean,
but it's got to be a concern. Like, you don't even have bodies for positioning to put out there. Like, Felicio is probably going to have to play the four, right? Like, you're going to have to run lineups like that tomorrow night.
I mean, I feel like Jabari last night was starting to embrace his role as the leader of that second unit. Now Fred has to say, okay, I'm down Bobby, I'm down Lowry. Do I have to put Jabari back into the starting lineup at the four? And then if so, where are you getting your points on that second unit? You know, like, I guess Blake and he can pour in some points, and that's about it. Like, no offense to Archie Diacono and Hutch, but a once overcrowded front court is now like, oh dear, what do you do? What, you're down so many bodies. Clearly, with Bobby expected now, the official results of the scan haven't come through yet, but the initial, as you said, the initial estimation is could be looking at another 4 to 6 week window, just like Chris Dunn. Unfortunately, like a freak thing where Bobby just kind of like jumped into, you know, was going for a loose ball and jumped into the stands and got hurt. Don't you think that Fred has to now once again seriously consider putting Jabari back into the starting lineup? Because what are you going to start Felicio alongside Wendell? Like, who, does anyone want that?
I don't think you can do that. Yeah, Jabari Parker is going to have to start. Like, that's, I don't think there's any question about it. It's got to be, at this point, Cameron Payne, Zach LaVine, Justin Holiday, Jabari Parker, and Wendell Carter Jr. But coming off the bench, man, I would not be shocked if I saw a super small lineup in there at times where Hutchison is even going to be asked to play the four, which is ridiculous to say. But you're that weak there that I don't know if having two bigs on the floor is just going to get the Bulls torched. If you play Wendell and Felicio at the same time, if you play Jabari and Felicio at the same time there, like at some point Jabari is going to have to get a rest. So you might be looking at potentially two centers on the floor at the same time, or Hutchison having to slide over from the three to the four. Either way, I don't like the sound of any of that.
None of it makes me feel good inside. The other option is that, I mean, you're talking about the second unit going real small. They could also go small with the first unit. And that would require Fred to have enough confidence to throw in another one of these guards that they just picked up. You know, Ulis is on a two-way, so it's not like they could be using him on a nightly basis. But maybe with another injury, we see Shaq Harrison for the first time on Friday. Like, who knows? Because at some point, Fred's going to run out of options for this is a typical lineup. I have a guy playing each position that makes sense. And in today's freewheeling modern NBA, you know, you don't really need a set lineup of this guy's playing this position and this guy's playing this position. It's so much more amorphous than it used to be. And a lot of the time, it means trotting out the, you know, the what Warriors call it, the lineup of death or whatever, small ball. The Bulls have a depth of backcourt options. We may not love any of them, but they at least have a depth of backcourt options. So you might see Fred go small for certain stretches of games too.
I think, I don't know how ready Raleigh Alkins is ready to play, but that might be an idea to entertain. I know the Windy City Bulls just started up training camp yesterday. That's why Ulis was there, and same thing with Raleigh Alkins. But at a point, like, the Bulls are going to have to consider bringing probably Alkins up to at least give him a shot. At least he's 6'5", 220 in a wingspan of about 6'8". Like, at least you've got something there of length. But yeah, you're right. They might go to a super small ball lineup. Either way, I'm very nervous, very scared about that idea, having to run with that for an extended period of time. Matt, I wanted to also say this too, is I'm hoping that Bobby Portis only misses somewhere around 4 weeks where the way that they're projecting. And I feel for the guy too, after just coming off the best season he's had as an NBA player, looking phenomenal in preseason, deciding him and the Bulls on both sides, deciding that they'll let the season play out and he'll be a restricted free agent. That's where I think I feel for him the most, is now he looks in an early injury after not signing an extension. You just got to feel for the guy.
It really stinks. It really does. Especially, as you said, the way he's looked so far, he was having a tough game before the injury happened, and he didn't have a great game against Dallas either. But he, no debate. There is no debate. He earned that starting spot over Jabari Parker. He did that with the work he put in this offseason and what he showed in the preseason, being clearly, hands down, the second best player on this team behind Zach LaVine for all of preseason and for their first couple of regular season games. And he did that after, as you said, didn't get the negotiation and the extension worked out. But he also did that after coming into the season. You and I talked to him at our bowling event with him where he said, I'm embracing this six-man role. You know, being a guy that's asked to come off the bench and score and, you know, be a motivator and a leader of that second unit. I am embracing that role. I can't wait to play that role this season. And he said and did all the right things. And even when people started talking about like, oh, wow, Jabari doesn't look very good. Maybe they should start Bobby. Bobby was just essentially saying, hey, whatever coach wants me to do, whatever my teammates want me to do, I'm going to do it. And he earned that starting spot. And this is just really, really unfortunate that this happened. And like you said, you just hope that we get some good news later today and it's not as serious as they fear it might be.
So if he's out 4 to 6 weeks, Dunn's out 4 to 6 weeks, Lauri Markkanen out 4 to 6 weeks, and we don't even have a timetable on Denzel Valentine, who sprained his surgically repaired ankle in training camp. So no timetable on him makes me think that he's going to be out longer than we expected too. So not having any of those guys, it is at this point, the Bulls are desperate. And I don't know how creative Fred's going to get with his lineups. But yeah, it certainly sucks about Portis. And I'm hoping that, and at least we can say this, that it's not as serious. It's not to the point where he's going to miss the entire season. The timetable right now is 4 to 6 weeks. Hopefully it's not as bad, but it could be worse. But it does suck for Portis, who coming off an extension in a contract year, missing the beginning of the season.
Yeah, it's a bummer. I mean, there's no two ways around it. It's a huge bummer. And, send all your good vibes and thoughts to Bobby Portis, Bulls Nation.
I got to ask the question, Matt, just because it's at that point where now this has become a problem. The injuries that are happening to the Bulls, at what point do you start asking questions about the training staff and the medical team and all of that? That's an integral part of a basketball team and performing at a high level. At what point do we start asking questions about, like, hey, what's going on? Like, all of our starters at the beginning of the season are out now with lengthy injuries for 4 to 6 weeks. Are you thinking that they're asking those types of questions internally? And when do we start kind of poking our heads and looking at that as a possible concern?
Two different answers to that question. Do you think internally they're asking those questions? No. Forgive my cynicism a little bit there, but no. This is the Bulls organization we're talking about. They have their staff. They love and trust their staff. They rarely question the people on their staff. Externally, looking at this from the fans' perspective, yeah, I've started to hear a lot of that with Markkanen and then Dunn and now Bobby. Valentine is like a lingering thing, and he's had leg and knee and ankle problems before becoming a member of the Bulls.
Right.
So that one I don't think necessarily fits in. And some of Dunn's injuries last season were fluky. Like, he dislocated his finger when it got jammed, and then he fell on his face after a dunk.
Right.
That's not the fault of the Bulls' strength and conditioning staff. That's not the fault of the Bulls' health staff. But some of this other stuff, the knees, you know, the this, the that. And Markkanen, by all accounts, his injury in training camp was a fluke thing, too, where he just kind of got his elbow caught when he was going up and fighting for a rebound. But the quantity of these injuries that we have seen in recent years compared to the average NBA team that just does not seem to have this many, you have to wonder a little bit, what is it? Like, is this team just cursed? Or is there something going on where these players are not being kept in peak physical condition in all the ways that they could be to prevent possible injuries? It's a weird conspiracy theory right now, and I'm not saying I entirely believe in it, but it is starting to become such a thing that is, come on, man, this can't just be a coincidence.
Right.
Like, it just can't be. What is up
and
with
you
this?
You did make the case. It is true. Like, the Bulls training staff can't do anything about Chris Dunn smashing his face into the United Center floor, and the dislocated finger, it happens. Injuries happen in practice. They happen in real-time games. But some of the other things, like you had said, like just the knee injuries, and how about the back spasms for Lauri Markkanen last year? and all the injuries, there are certain special cases, but when they're stacking up at this quantity this early in a season, for some of your younger guys, there's got to be start to ask some questions. And I'm with you. I'm not buying into this conspiracy theory yet, but certainly a lot of Bulls fans are asking those questions right now. Like, what's going on with the training staff? Why are these guys all getting hurt, and why is it so early in the season? So I don't know if anybody's going to ask the question at the press conference to any of the guys the next time John Paxson or Gar Foreman decide to speak. I don't know if that's going to be a top of conversation from the media, but I would imagine if anything else goes wrong, knock on wood, it doesn't. That's got to be an important question to start asking, and I would hope somebody does.
Yeah, but I mean, at some point, you have to at least look at your staff and ask, and just sit down and ask them, you know, what could we be doing better to ensure the health, the health of our players as far as preventing possible injury and doing everything we can to keep these players healthy on a daily basis. Because the NBA schedule right now, this season, is as easy as it's ever been. No more 4 games in 5 nights. Significantly reduced number of back-to-back games. And oh, by the way, just to create an even bigger buffer of the schedule in general, they started the regular season 2 weeks earlier than normal. So it's not about, oh man, they're running these guys ragged on a long 82-game season. No, this season will be the softest schedule for the Bulls and every other team in the league. It's not about that. So if these injuries keep piling up, you got to start asking yourselves, what are we doing wrong and what could we do better to keep our players healthy?
Cap off the episode with some positives, though. I brought this up to you off air right before we started recording, and I said, if I told you that the Bulls had 2 players in the top 10 in offensive rating through 4 games, you probably would have smacked me the same way saying Cameron Payne was going to drain 7 threes in a game last night. I brought this up to you, and here are the 2 players that are leading offensive rating in the NBA so far through 4 games. Number 1 in the NBA right now, number 1, Antonio Blakeney with a offensive rating of 130. That is ridiculous. Antonio Blakeney, even though he, you know, we've criticized his defense and the defensive rating isn't great, his net rating is an 18.7, positive 18.7, which is great to see. The other one, who just got in the game for the first time in the regular season last night, albeit it was only 16 minutes of play, but Cristiano Felicio comes in at number 7 at 126.5 for a net rating of 29.5. He had a defensive rating of 97 last night in the 16 minutes he played. So pretty crazy. Top 10 is a little bit skewed if you look at the other names that are involved. Tony Snell is number 4 overall. Elfrid Payton is number 5 in offensive rating. And to round out the back end, it's Kyle Lowry, Anthony Davis. But it's pretty crazy. 4 games in, Antonio Blakeney, the number 1 offensive rated player in the NBA. At least got to give him a little bit of props for that.
Yeah. I'm flabbergasted right now. I feel like Ron Burgundy Brian is talking to him about Sex Panther, and he says the thing about 60% of the time it works every time. I'm like, I feel like Rod Burgundy right now when I hear that Blakeney stat. I'm like, that doesn't make sense.
60% of the time it works every time.
That doesn't make sense.
Doesn't make sense.
I don't
know what to do with that. I guess it does just go to show you that sometimes these super analytical numbers that people start crunching about NBA basketball and offensive rating and defensive rating and player efficiency and true shooting, you know, all these, you know, and plus a lot of it is, you know, it can be real wonky sometimes.
That is for sure. A couple other notes before we get out of here. Zach LaVine obviously had mentioned the start he had, 4 games of 30 plus points. He's still 3rd in the league in points per game, coming in behind Blake Griffin, who dropped a 50 burger earlier this week.
At least the Bulls didn't give 50 to him, huh?
Oh, man, I know. That he just looked amazing the other night. And then Steph Curry last night, if you stayed up to watch the Warriors, you were rewarded and rewarded and rewarded
again.
He
had 51, and he only played 3 quarters.
Man, we have to see that Monday night.
Oh, my God. That and it was so funny because we were all just like, so we were doing our Bulls Outsiders last night and we were just like going nuts, goofing around, having a great time talking about the insane game that Cam dropped. And it was like, dude, Cam hit 7 threes, Bulls franchise record. And then I'm following the Warriors game on Twitter on my commute home late last night, and I'm like, oh, maybe Steph saw Cam drill 7 threes. I was like, oh, nope, not gonna let that stand. Not gonna let Cam Payne steal my spotlight, motherfuckers.
Oh, so props to Zach LaVine, though. He comes in at second highest in field goal percentage among those players at 57.1%, shooting 40% from three, even though he was only 1 for 5 last night, still shooting over 40%. So that's good to see, too. Would love to, for him to stack on top of the night he had last night, on top of the Hornets again. In a depleted Bulls roster, Zach LaVine is in top 5 in usage percentage at 32.8% through 4 games. And I would imagine that's going to go up now with not having Bobby Portis as one of your main scorers, not having Dunn, not having Markkanen, not having Valentine. I would not be surprised if Zach LaVine's usage percentage is north of 35% after a handful more of these games.
I wouldn't be upset if it was.
Me either. The last thing I've got for you, Cameron Payne's 7 threes. It's the first time a Bulls player has hit 7 or more threes in a game since Niko Mirotić back on March 23rd, 2016, where he hit 9. So just thought I'd throw that out there for you.
That's impressive.
Good stuff from Cameron Payne. Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Hit us up with your reaction, 331-979-1369. Are you concerned at all about all the Bulls injuries so far? Are you guys asking the questions we're kind of floating out there now about the Bulls training staff? We'd love to hear what your thoughts are on it. On the Bulls' first win again, going up against the Hornets tomorrow night, 331-979-1369. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow to drive you into the weekend. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com